we are holding on Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph, 7 lines from the top. Okay, we've started talking about the dinim of Ritzeach, because the Ritzeach is one of the two kinds of, is one of the two kinds of criminals who get hereg, the other being the people of the Erni Dachas, which we'll deal with at the end of the Masechta. So we started talking about the dinim of Ritzeach. We mentioned, the Mishnah had given examples where somebody pressed a person down in the water or in the fire, and he wasn't able to get out of there, and then he's considered a murderer, and he's chayv mitzah. On the other hand, if you only pushed him in and the guy would have been able to get out, then he's potter. So that brought us into the whole issue which we started talking about, called mitzamtzim, where you have you're confining somebody in a confined space where they're going to suffocate, or they're going to be affected by the heat or the cold or whatnot. That kind of concept is called mitzamtzim.
From where they cannot get out.
From where they can't, right. And we talked about it, and we brought a pasuk over Eva that a person is chayv mitzvah for such a thing. So now, continuing on this topic, Amar Rava, kofsoi umesva rav, if a person ties up another person and then that person ends up dying of hunger, potter, the one who tied him up is potter. Why? Because the
couldn't tie himself.
But the hunger that was going to kill him didn't exist at the time. Mitzamtzim, like we talked about in the water or the fire, the amount of water that could kill him, that could suffocate him, the amount of fire that could burn him already exists. Here, the amount of hunger, in fact, Tosfos points out, we're not even talking about even, let's say, when the guy was tied up, he just had a full meal. We're talking about even he was tied up, he was already hungry. But it wasn't a killing hunger yet. Later on, the hunger is going to come. That's not the same thing as mitzamtzim, where already the lethal force already exists. Here, the lethal force doesn't exist yet, and it ends up coming on its own. So he's potter, obviously.
Because he can't go and eat.
That's fine, but nevertheless, it's still not considered. The person who tied him up didn't directly, it's an indirect causation. And therefore, so he won't be chayv mi. So obviously the Eibishter will deal with such a person. Anochi edrish mi. Maybe the Eibishter will deal with such a person, but he can't be chayv mi for it.
If you say you couldn't untie
it, doesn't matter. No, because again, the case in our Mishnah, is there was right there already, there was something lethal that would kill him. The water itself is capable of killing him. You held his head underwater.
Slowly,
but that's the point. It's not there yet. At the time he was tied up, the amount of hunger that would kill a person doesn't exist yet.
There,
yeah.
And if he was a diabetic.
Same difference. The point is, at the time when he was tied up, there wasn't yet the force that is going to kill him didn't exist yet. It ends up coming about on its own. So yes, obviously the one who tied him up is definitely chayav b'dinei shamayim, no question about that. But he's not chayav b'dinei odom. Even though he's the one who didn't cause the hunger. He made that the hunger is now going to be able to have its effect, but that's an indirect effect. He tied him up, therefore preventing him from being able to go and get food that would have been able to save his hunger, and therefore he wouldn't die. But so it's an indirect thing. It's not a direct thing like pushing him into like holding him down in the water, where the water itself, as it is capable of killing him. What about if umes? What about if a person ties up somebody else in the sun, and then he ends up dying from the heat or sunstroke or whatever? Or betzino umes, so he tied him up in the cold, and the guy died from the cold, from exposure. In those cases, chayev, then he's chayev, because at the time, the lethal force already exists. So he goes in the middle of the day and ties the guy up where the sun is beating down on him. That sun itself is like the water and like the fire of our mission.
It doesn't occur immediately, but it's
capable of killing almost immediately, as opposed to hunger takes time to develop.
No. So does the sun. It takes time.
That's the point.
Kill you in 2 minutes.
No, but the heat of the sun by itself, enough heat of the sun. Look, a drop of water can't kill a person either. A whole swimming pool of water will. So the same thing. The sun, it's there already. The lethal force that is killing him already exists. As opposed, it's not developing as time goes on. On the other hand, let's say he does it first thing in the morning, where at the time the sun is not shining down on him, and then an hour later the sun reaches that place and it starts beating down on him and eventually kills him, or the same thing with the cold, potter, then he's potter, because again, then it's only grumma. Again, we're not saying that he's allowed to do it. We're not saying that saying he's a tzaddik for doing it. He's forced to Russia. He's forced to Eved will deal with him. But Beis Din can't execute him for that.
What happened here? He's very, very starving, and he could have like food and nothing. And then he ties him up. So like 5 minutes later, he'll be.
Then maybe, because then maybe you could argue the force that will kill him already pretty much exists. Maybe. I don't know. Okay. V'amar Rava, and then Rava says another din. Kofse lifnei ari potter lifnei yatushin chayev. If one person ties up another one in front of a lion, and lion ends up eating him, then he's potter. On the other hand, if he does the same thing in front of mosquitoes, then he is chayev. Now, what's the difference between a lion and mosquitoes? Rashi says the difference is because a person is not going to be able to save himself from a lion even if he's not tied up. In other words, Rashi apparently understands the situation is that the victim would have been in danger from the lion anyway. So therefore, tying him up doesn't really add anything. On the other hand, the mosquitoes he could have gotten away from. That's Rashi. Most other Rishonim, the Yad Ramah has problems with Rashi's explanation. Tosfos doesn't even mention Rashi's explanation, but they give a couple of other explanations. One of them is, Tosfos mentions, and the Yad Ramah mentions this as one of his explanations, is the difference is, again, the lion hasn't started attacking him yet. So it's similar to Sof Cham Alavei, Sof Sin Alavei. It's similar to the hunger. The actual lethal force hasn't started attacking yet, as opposed to the mosquitoes are already stinging the poor guy right away, even before you tied him up. So therefore, it's a more direct thing. It's more the equivalent of the sun already beating down on him. And then the Yad Ramah brings a third explanation, which is the lion isn't necessarily going to devour him. What if the lion is already full? Mashenkin, the mosquitoes, it's a given they're going to be biting the guy. Well, apparently we're talking about there's enough mosquitoes that they're gonna suck out enough blood from him to kill him, or I don't know, maybe also we're talking about a place where the mosquitoes carry malaria or whatever, and they'll kill him from that. I don't know, whatever. So he says if it was in front of mosquitoes, you'd be chayev because the mosquitoes definitely are going to be biting him. Whereas the lion, according to Rashi, the difference is he wouldn't have been able to save himself from the lion anyway. According to Tosfos, it's because the lion hasn't yet started attacking him, whereas the mosquitoes do. And according to the Yad Ramah, it's because the lion may or may not attack him, the mosquitoes will definitely attack him. Okay, Rav Ashi says, no, I feel a lifnei yatushin nami potter. Even if you tie him up in front of mosquitoes, you're also potter. Hani azli v'hani osu. Because you have different mosquitoes. You have the ones that were there first and started biting him are not necessarily the ones that end up killing him. They're all swarming around. They're all coming and going. Each mosquito is an entity of its own. So therefore you can't say, unlike, for example, where it was water or fire, like in our Mishnah, bees would be the same thing, yeah.
What would be higher?
Yeah, no, it would be, according to Rav Ashi, same logic. It would be potter, because not necessarily the same bees the whole time. You have one group of bees stings him and then dies. Bees, other than even more so. Bees, we know every time a bee stings, it dies. So of necessity, the ones that first bit him aren't the ones that end up killing
That's
him.
That's what happens. Each one.
Yeah, you know how it is, that bees sting and then they die, yeah. Anyway, the difference is, in other words, one of the Rishonim, Reb David Bonafed, explains that the difference is, in the Mishnah, we're talking about water or fire. Yeah, you could also argue that this particular molecule of water that he tied, that was there when he tied him up, isn't necessarily the same one later, fine, but molecules of water have no independent existence, it's all just water, as opposed to each mosquito is an independent entity. Okay.
Yeah,
well, they are. Each one is a living creature of its own.
Right.
Okay. Fine.
Yeah,
another.
By the
that doesn't matter. Everything is controlled by the Eibishter, but yeah. Okay.
So,
no, the point is you put him in a position where he's going to end up getting bit by mosquitoes. So therefore, you are chayav b'dinei shamayim, but according to Rav Ashi, and this is halacha, you can't make him. You can't say that he's chayav b'dinei adam. Okay. Next. It's fine. Now we have a discussion like this. Kofa all of Jesus. What if a person overturns a barrel on top of somebody else? And therefore, so eventually the air in there runs out and the guy suffocates. Upara all of Maziva, or what about another possibility? The guy was in a room, let's say the guy was sleeping in a room. You went and ripped open the plaster on the ceiling over there, so therefore the cold could come in, and eventually the cold could kill, and eventually the cold killed him. Rava v'Rabzera. So Rava and Rabzera argue on this. Chadar v'chayev v'chadar v'potter. One says in these cases he's chayev, and the other says he's potter.
If you open the ceiling.
So if you open the ceiling so that the cold gets to him, or or you overturn the barrel over him, and eventually he suffocates in there. Then one between Rava and Rav Zera, one says Chayev, one says Potter. Which one says which? Tistayim, we can conclude the Rava who da'ama Potter. We can conclude that Rava must be the one who said you Potter in these cases, based on the Amar Rava, namely because we have what Rava said before. Kapsev umes barav Potter. We said before that if he tied him up and the guy died of hunger, then he's Potter. Bechura, this is the same kind of thing. The hunger that's going to kill him didn't exist at the time. The same thing. The stale air, the carbon dioxide that ends up killing him because he suffocates inside the barrel over there didn't exist at the time. The cold,
it was caused by
Grumma is Potter. The same thing with the cold that's going to kill him didn't exist necessarily at the time you opened up the Maziva. So therefore, on the face of it, Rava must be the one who's saying you're Potter.
The problem with that is the Gemara said, no, Abba. No, on the contrary, just signed that Abzeira was Gamma Potter. On the contrary, you could argue, I can bring you a proof that Abzeira would be the one who would hold in these cases that you're Potter.
If you have a person take somebody else into a house, into a building made out of marble, now the difference is most kinds a marble room is the Gemara is the example the Gemara uses for an airtight room. In those days, the only way to make an airtight room was to build it out of marble. Any other material would be porous and air would get in. The Gemara mentions in a few places, for example, the Gemara talks about when they had to do, for example, you have the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon in Bava Metzia, where he had an operation done to take fat out of him and see if the fat would spoil, to see whether he's going to end up suffering, having to deal with Gehenna or not. They had to do it in a base of the Shisha. They had to do it in a marble room. That sort of thing. That was the equivalent of an operating room in those days, because it would be airtight. It would be,
Why did they do that?
As we had over there, that he'd been capturing Ganovim, and afterwards it turned out that there was always the concern that what if some of these people who he fingered to the Roman government, maybe after all they were innocent, maybe they didn't have to die. He found in the end that yes, he has a Simon Min HaShemayim, that all of them Taka were guilty of something that they deserved to die, and therefore they just made it happen to him. But nevertheless, he wanted to check to see, to make sure, am I going to have to rot in the grave and then have to go through Gehenna or not? So he was very fat, as we said over there. So he had fat taken out of his stomach with an operation and left it out in the sun to see if it would putrefy, if it would spoil, and it didn't.
And then he knew that he was correct.
And so he accepted on himself. You saw it and he said it there. The point is, the Gemara mentions over there that they brought him into a room made out of marble for this reason. Again, it's airtight, so this way no outside air will get in there and then cause it to get infected.
That was not the only thing they did?
No, I'm mentioning that as an example where we see that a marble room is an airtight room. Okay. There's a couple of other examples, but anyway, whatever. Okay, so a person takes another person into a marble room, but obviously shraga, and he lit a candle in there, where after a while the candle burns up all the oxygen in the room, and then umes, and then the guy dies, chayim, implying time of the obligle shraga. Lechura, why is Reb Zera being the chayim, the person, because he lit a candle. Hold on. Only because he lit a candle, which then the candle itself already starts creating the lethal force. Ha, like obliquely shraga, implying, no, before that was Rava. Rava was the one saying about the hunger. Here we're talking Reb Zera. Reb Zera doesn't have to agree with Rava. In this case, in our case over here, Kofal of Gigas, he's disagreeing with him. But we're trying to prove from this case of the marble room, Reb Zera is saying, why is he kind of only because he lit a candle? Implying if you hadn't lit a candle, then no. Even though Taka, the guy, ends up breathing all the oxygen in the room and suffocates because of that, L'chorer of Zero would say, in that case, you're Potter. Only because you lit the candle, which makes it that now the candle uses up the oxygen much faster than he's Chayim. So therefore, on the face of it then, when it comes to Kofal of Gigas, where there's no candle in there, it's just the person himself breathing, uses up all the oxygen, it sounds like Reb Zera would be the one who's saying you're Potter, in which case Rava would have to be the one who's saying you're Chayim. The answer is no. Amri, they answer, no, the difference is Hosam Balashaga like Masko Kevil Bashaife, because the difference is without the candle over there, the lethal force doesn't start right away. You don't have right away that the guy being in this room, you don't have that he's not able to breathe.
He's using oxygen,
fine, but the amount of oxygen he uses with a couple of breaths is nothing compared to the amount of oxygen in the room total. Okay, but here, when he's under a barrel,
right away, even without a candle, already you have, there's enough, it's a confined enough area that without that even without a candle over there, the lethality begins, right? The difference is the amount of air. The amount of air relative to the amount you breathe. Fine. That's so you could argue that's a significant difference, and therefore you could argue that Abzera would still hold. In the case with the room, you're only chayev if you light a candle. In the case of a barrel, you could be chayev even without the candle. And that's the Gemara's Maskana, which means it comes out, Rava is the one who's saying that he would be potter in this case of the barrel. Mm-hmm. The halacha is taka like that, which
he would
be potter because again, it's not a direct. So why is he potter? So it's in a couple of the Noisa Kalim on the Rambam deal with the fact. The Rambam on the one hand brings the dinim mitzamtzim that we're talking about before, and the Rambam gives as an example, let's say if you built a structure around a person to cut off his air. Then you chayev. On the other hand, cough all of gigis. If you put a barrel on top of him, you're potter. What's the difference? There obviously has to be a difference of one you chayev and one you potter. So the Mepharshim on the Rambam, the Noisa Kalim on the Rambam, go through a couple of possibilities. The Kesef Mishnah again talks about the idea that maybe the difference is when you're building the room, as you're building it, more and more of the supply of oxygen from the outside is getting cut off. Then you put in that final brick, and like it does the last final thing, as opposed to the gigis. And no, without even a candle, just you're adding bricks to the structure, and as the air is getting more and more cut off, the air is getting more and more close, and then you put in the final brick, and that's it. Then it can be considered that you cause the lethal force then, as opposed to the gigas, where it's all, you put the whole thing down on him at one time, then that would be different. You could be potter on that, because again, you have a certain amount
down to the ground.
You have a certain amount of air in there in between. Okay, then the Mekeves HaMishnah and a couple of other Achronim on the Rambam want to say the difference is that maybe the case about building a building about him around the guy is that you have it, like you put it right in front of the guy's nose, literally, so like you literally cut off his air directly, as opposed to the gigas is all around him, you know, there's still room around him a little bit. And the Ursa Mayach talks about the idea gigas is movable, conceivably the guy could flail around and move the gigas enough off the ground to be able to get the barrel. He can move it up off the ground conceivably enough to get a breath of air, whereas a building you can't do that. Whatever. So those are the various. So then he'd be chayiv in the case of building the building, but potter in the case of the barrel. Okay. So now we're going to have a few dinim in this connection that Rava is going to say, for which we have a simon, sulam, tris, samon, and bakosol. Four dinim involving ritzicha. Case number one, Amar Rava, doch for labor, if a person pushes somebody else into a pit, the sulam babur, now let's say there's a ladder in the pit, so the guy would be able to climb out. But somebody else came and took the ladder away.
Who is Chayav?
Even if he took out the ladder ahead of time, potter. Then he's potter. To be in the shadia yachalala. So because when he threw him in, he would have still been able to come out. Meaning, you can't be mechayev and throwing him into the pit because the other guy would have been able to come out. The ladder was taken away afterwards. Okay, but that's afterwards. Then at that point, taking away the ladder is a grumma, and he can't be mechayev for the grumma.
But he exposed him to the possibility of having.
So that's the point. Even we're saying it's the same person that threw him in the pit and took away the ladder. Nevertheless, those are two different actions. Neither one by itself would have been enough. Putting him in the pit at the time, at the time that wouldn't have been lethal. He could have climbed out. Taking away the ladder. Obviously, we're talking about where it's not deep enough to kill him just from the fall. We're talking about where it's shallow enough that, yeah. But, well, there's pillows at the bottom of it, whatever. The point is, it's not the fall that's going to kill him. Right. But and then the taking away the ladder is only a grumma. So therefore, he'd be potter. Again, the Eibishter will deal with him, but he's potter. Okay. Case number two. The Amar Rava, Zora Chay, suppose a person shoots an arrow, or Tris Fiyadei, and the victim has a shield in his hand, and then before the arrow reaches him, somebody else yanks away the shield, so then the arrow ends up hitting him and killing him. Or again, just like in the previous case, even if the one who shot the arrow went ahead and got there before the arrow reached him and pulled away the shield, or the Meiri says another possibility.
Shot the arrow.
So he shot the arrow, and he ran faster than the arrow and managed to get there. Okay, so that therefore the Meiri says maybe we should be talking about he has a rope attached to the
arrow?
Shield. Rope attached to the shield. So
okay.
He shoots the arrow and then yanks away the shield using the rope. Whatever it is, same thing. Potter in both same idea. He'd be Potter, the one who shot the arrow. Again, same idea. To be Idna the Shadiyabe, because when he shot the arrow, Mifsek Piske Giri, the arrows are interrupted. The arrow, when he shot it, was not capable of killing because there was a shield in the way. The shield was removed afterwards.
He wasn't killed when he shot. He was killed after he shot.
Once you shot the arrow is out of your hands already. The arrow is out of your hands already. Rashi mentions this. We had this recently in Rashi in Chumash over there, that the boss of a dumb, once he shoots his arrows, they're out of his hand. The Eberster just shoots his arrows and they remain in his hand. He always controls them. But no, the point is, in other words, that a human being, once they shoot an arrow or a bullet or whatever, it's out of their hands. So therefore, at that point, now, we're not going to say that, you're not going to say, well, I shot it over here and it landed over there, so therefore I'm potter, because it's grummer, it's not grummer. We learned about this concept in Bava Kama, for example. We had that, no, you shoot an arrow, the whole flight of it is considered directly from koiche, it's considered directly your action.
Correct,
we
said. If
yeah.
Wind and
yeah, no, we're not talking, well, that's the point. Here there's a shield in the way. Here there's a shield in the way, so therefore, when he shoots the arrow, that arrow is not capable of killing. By the time it reaches here, the shield is gone. Doesn't matter. You didn't shoot an arrow that was capable of killing, and the guy who took away the shield only did a grumma. Or even if it's the one who shot the arrow is himself the one who yanked away the shield, still, that part is only grumma.
The shield did what?
The guy, suppose you have one person who did both. He shot the arrow, and he yanked away the shield.
And he's
Kaya. No, he's not Kaya, because at the time he shot the arrow, the shield was there. So there's no lethal force. Okay. That was case number two. V'omar Rava, then Rava says, case number three, Zorach Bechet.
He shoots, and at the same time he removes the shield.
What's the same time? If the shield was there at the time the arrow was shot, and if he does them both the same second, I don't know. You'll have to use one of those cameras like they use in baseball games or whatever to see which came first, you know. But whatever, I don't know. Okay. Yeah. Case number three, V'omar Rava, Zorach Bechet V'samon in B'yadeh. What happens? So one person shoots an arrow at somebody else, but the victim has in his hand medicine that he would have been able to apply to heal the wound, so that the wound wouldn't necessarily have killed him. U'ba'achar Pizron, and again we have a case, somebody else went and scattered those medicines, and now it's not available, and the guy ends up dying from the wound. Or even if the one who shot the arrow himself also scattered the medicines, Potter. Because again, the same logic, when he shot the arrow, it didn't necessarily have lethal force, because he would have been able to be healed. Amar Ravashi says, on that logic, by that logic, then we can say not only if the victim himself was holding the sammonim, even if the sammonim are available easily in the marketplace, and therefore somebody could have run over and gotten them before the guy bled to death or whatever it is, then still, by the same logic, the one who shot the arrow would be potter, because there was medicine available at the time. It's interesting, the Rambam brings these various dinim of Rava l'halacha. He doesn't bring this particular one involving the medicine. And the Oros Hameach and the Rambam argues the reason is because the Rambam may understand that it's not Rav Ashi making a statement, but Rav Ashi asking a rhetorical question. By that logic that you're saying, you could always pop the Oros Hameach. There's always medicines available to heal the guy. There's always first aid available. Obviously, you're not going to say that. Okay, so that's
bringing about that.
So therefore, it's one thing if there was an actual shield in the way over there to actually prevent the arrow from hitting him, or there was an actual ladder there to allow the guy to get out or whatever, that's one thing. But you're going to say because there would have been medicines available to cure him, that maybe is too much of a stretch. L'chora, I mean, the Rambam doesn't bring this whole concept at all, not in his hand, not anywhere. Okay. So now, what happens, let's say, for example, after...
When a guy hangs somebody,
one
ties him up, and the other one pulls the chair.
Yeah.
Who is higher and who is potter?
Good question. You might conceivably say the same thing, that it's like the pit and the ladder. The one who tied the rope around his neck, that in and of itself isn't going to kill him. But on the other hand, without the rope pulling away the chair, yeah. But maybe you could argue it's the same thing. Each one is only doing a half a thing, so I don't know. Good question. I don't know. Okay. Omelette of Acha, greater of a little of Ashi. How about Nizamnu loy someone in Mao? Let's take a case as follows. What happens if at the time of the blow, at the time he was shot with the arrow, there weren't medicines available? Let's say, though, that afterwards the victim had, there were medicines available that he could have bought in order to heal himself, so he wouldn't end up dying. And in the event he didn't do that, he didn't go and spend money on those medicines, so he wound up dying. What would be the din? On the one hand, he could have healed himself. On the other hand, the medicines didn't exist at the time when the arrow was shot. So therefore, you could argue at the time it had lethal force, even though medicine became available afterwards. Amalei, so Rav Ashi says, true, but Hare Yotzim based in Zakai. The fact is, given that before they went to Beis Din, there's a way to find a schus for the guy, and we've established before in the Masechta that once the guy is declared innocent by Beis Din, they can't say, well, new evidence has shown up, therefore we're going to retry him and find him guilty. Then by the same logic over here, since there was reason to exonerate him because at some point after the guy was hit, he could have been healed. He didn't necessarily have to die from this wound. Then therefore you don't have a basis for being Mechayim, the guy. There is going to be the next Mishnah and the Gemara on it, actually, are going to talk about a somewhat related case where a person hits somebody else and injures him. What we do is if the victim doesn't die, but he's ill, and we don't know whether he's going to die yet, what we do is, we'll say in the Gemara later on, we take the attacker and put him in jail until we see what develops. If the guy ends up dying from it, then this guy is a ritzeach, and we put him to death. If not, then we let him go, if the guy recovers from it. V'amar Rava, Zorak tsror b'koysel. If a person throws a stone at a wall, now, what he was intending, so Rashi understands the situation over here is, we're talking about he's doing the mazid. He intends to kill somebody else. But instead of throwing the rock directly at him, he intends to actually do it by bouncing the rock off the wall and having it hit the other guy. So then it bounced off the wall, the horga, and it killed. Chayev. Then he can't be chayev.
Because
he had it in mind, but more to the point, Rashi says because koichei, that is considered his direct koyach.
So
that's not considered an indirect. That's not considered an indirect thing. That's considered a direct thing. It bounced off the wall because of the force that he put.
Okay, so let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
If he threw the wall, the same exact scenario, but he didn't have it in mind.
If there's no Eden Vatra, you can't be Machai anyway. Okay, so actually, well, one second, no. The first case that we're talking about over here involving the stone, Rashi says it's talking about the mazid. We're now going to have a case, the Gemara is going to mention, involving a bull, which Rashi says is we're dealing with the question of shoydig. Is he chayav golos or not? So you could also have, so in other words, you could also have a similar case where he does it for shoydig. He doesn't intend to kill, but he does it in a way which is careless and therefore leads to death. And the question is he chayav golos? Is he chayav to go to Ari Mikvot or not? Tosfos discusses at some length over here also the question of in these cases are we talking about b'shogig or are we talking about b'mezid? So that's because that's the question. In other words, you could argue, in other words, when it comes to b'mezid, you need also, for example. Tosfos talks about, based on a Gemara and Bava Kama, for example, you need, let's say, that the thing shouldn't have traveled further than you intended to. If you intended to throw a rock only 2 amas, for example, and it ended up traveling 4 amas and killing a person, that wouldn't necessarily make him that wouldn't make him chayav golos. Never mind Misa, because he didn't mean to, but it wouldn't even make him chayav golos because he only intended to throw it 2 amas. You need both. You kind of need both. You need an intent. Here in the case of the rock, you're talking about intent to kill, actually. And therefore, the point, the chiddush is that you shouldn't say, he threw the rock in this direction. It killed him in this direction. Maybe he should be potter. No, because the fact that it traveled in this direction comes from his koyach. So therefore, it's exactly the same as shooting an arrow and it hitting the guy in
the face. So you need both?
It comes to a mazid, of course, you need intent and you need result. If there's no result, there's no chiyuv mitzvah, and you need intent.
I agree that you need a result, but who says you need an intent?
For mitzvah, of course, you need an intent. You need eidim v'asarah, too. You need Asherah, you need Hitzra, Asherah, and Amisa, you need all that.
Otherwise, he's Pasha. I mean, he has a Nezek, but he's Pasha.
No, we're talking about Misa. We're talking about the he killed the guy. So there's no Chiyuv Nezakin involved in the question. Is he Chayiv Misa, or is he Pasha and Nevishter will deal with him? Okay. The Tana Tuna, and indeed we learn something like that in a Braisa. Kegoin Elo Amasak in Bekadur. You have a case of people who are playing ball. Same idea. They're playing like handball or whatever, against the bouncing the ball off the wall to hit the other person. Shahogu, and they kill somebody with the ball. So Rashi describes, for example, this is for example a kid's game. They bounce the ball hard off the wall so it'll bounce back. So and Rashi further describes, actually Rashi describes the game interestingly over here. After he throws the ball, he runs away. The other guy catches the ball and tries to hit him with it. I guess it seems the way Rashi is describing it, it sounds kind of like a combination of handball and baseball, but I don't know. Okay. Here, look in Rashi. Look in Rashi. Going near on the sakin. It's about the middle of the narrow lines in Rashi. Going near on the sakin the kader shahogu. Regilin to noikus lahakus a kader b'kosel b'koyach. Kids often they bounce a ball against the wall hard. Kedesh atachzo lacharei harbe, so that it'll bounce very far back. Ola achash azodik after he throws the ball. He runs away. And his friend grabs the ball and hits him with it. So that's the question. So if he throws the ball in such a way that it's going to bounce back and kill the other guy. So going back to the Gemara now, b'mezid, if he does it b'mezid neharovian, then he can be executed. B'shogeg, if he does it b'shogeg golem, then he goes to Golos. So the question is, Vashoga Golan Pshita. Okay, but obviously if you did Vashoga, you should go into Golos. Why would we think not? It's no different than any other case of killing Vashoga. The answer is Vamezid Nehadrogan. The Chiddush is the part that was saying that if he did Vamezid, that he intended for the ball to hit the other guy, that we say we can execute him. That's the Chiddush. Because after all, we know in order to execute him, you're going to need Edim Bahasra. Right. So what can the Edim give him Hasra? Can they say for sure that the ball is going to hit the other guy? They don't know if it will. Maudetema hasra sophiki. You would think it should be considered a hasra sophik. It's a hasra. If you do such an if you throw the ball in such a way that it ends up hitting the guy, then you'll have committed murder. Is that considered a valid hasra or not? Mi ema dehadra. Who says it's going to bounce back exactly in that direction? Kamash Malan, that is the chiddush. Such a hasra is valid. They are able to give him a hasra like that hasra suffix. If you throw the ball in such a way that it winds up bouncing and then hitting the guy, you are going to be chayav. That is considered a valid hasra. That's the chiddush of that part. And then once we mention that, then we also mention the concept of b'shogeg. Tony to Tachlifa b'ma'arava kameidu rababahu. So on this further on this rule about bouncing a ball on a wall and killing somebody. And a tachlifa by ma'arava tore a braisa in front of Rabbo. It depends. To go in elu amasach in bekader, this case of people who are playing ball, shahogu b'soich arba amas, if the person who's killed was within 4 amas of the wall, so therefore the ball didn't have to travel 4 amas, had to travel 4 amas or less from the wall before it hit him, potter. Then the one who threw the ball is potter. If the victim was standing out more than 4 amas away from the wall, chayev, then the one who threw the ball is chayev. So let's consider the case. What is the scenario? Why should we make a distinction between more or less than 4 amas? If he didn't want for it to bounce so far back after the Protonami, if he wanted it to bounce back however much after the Protonami, then even if he's very close to the wall, he threw the ball hard enough that he intended it to bounce much further back, and instead it only bounced back a little bit from the wall and ended up hitting the guy and killing him. Well, so what? Why are we saying that he should be potter? He should still be chayev golos. It was b'shogeg. Either loy nichale, if he didn't want it to bounce that far back, after the turvanami, then even if it's more than 4 amas, he should be potter. Again, Rashi brings the same Gemara from Makkos that Tosfos brings. Tosfos refers to Baba Kama, but whatever. That you have that if you intended to throw something 2 amas and instead it traveled 4 amas and hit somebody and killed him, you potter from Golos.
because you didn't want it to travel that far. So what is the scenario over here? What is the case?
You wanted to kill him?
No, they were talking about Shogun. They were talking about gold. You weren't intending to kill anybody. But we know that if you intended to throw a ball 4 amas, for example, and attacker traveled 4 amas and hit a guy and killed him, you're chayav gold.
But
if you intended 2 amas and it went further than you intended and it ended up killing, then you pulled it from gold. So by the same logic over here, why are we distinguishing between within 4 amas of the wall and more than 4 amas from the wall? What's the logic? Amalei, so Rav Ashi answers, Stam Mesachkin Bakadru, yes, but generally speaking, when people play this ball game, Kamad Aili Tfei, the closer they are to the wall, Menach Nichalei, they like to do that. They want to be as close as possible to the wall so that the ball will bounce back as far as possible. So therefore, the guy's attacker does not want the ball to travel less than 4 amas. He's after standing close to the wall and then throwing it hard, so it'll bounce back more than 4 amas. So therefore, it's outside. If it lands outside 4 amas, he's back a chayev, because then it accomplished what he intended to. He wanted it to go back very far. But if it killed within 4 amas, he didn't intend it for it to go so close. The whole point why he stood so close to the wall was to make it bounce further back. Okay. There's a different gears over here, not the Aili Tfei, not the closer they are to the wall, but the Asli Minei, the further it goes. Same idea, though. The point is, he wants the ball to go as far as possible, and therefore, if it landed close to the wall, then yeah. Rashi brings another explanation that when we're talking that in this case over here, of Mesach and Bekadur, this case of within 4 amas and outside 4 amas, we're not talking about whether he's Chayav Golos or not. We're talking whether he's Chayav Misa or not. Again, assuming there was Asra Sopik, as we said before, would he be Chayav Misa or not? And we're making according to the second explanation, in Rashi, we're making that same distinction. That depends if it was within 4 amas or outside.
Of course, he was.
So he stands closer to the wall, and he intends for the ball to go much further, to go further back, and therefore you could argue that he's not chayev misa if it landed within 4 amas.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. The question is, lememra dekai gavna koichu, are you telling me that this kind of thing, throwing a ball against the wall and having it bounce back, are you telling me that such a thing is called koichu, which so far we've been saying that, yes, that's why you can be chayev misa or golos or what have you? Or to many, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A Mishnah says in the Sefta Parah, now we know that you have the paradrum of water, you have water, you have maim chayim from the spring, you take paradrum ashes and put some of them on top of the water. It has to be the ashes were actually placed on the water. It can't be they fell in. So HaMakadish, if somebody is being Makadish, meaning he's putting the ashes into the water to make it into Mechatas, the Nafo Kiddush al Yodai, and some of the ashes fall on his hand, or it falls on the side of the container, and afterwards it falls into the trough where he has the water, puzzle. Then that's puzzle. Which, now, Lechura, what are we talking about? Lechura, what we're talking about is that he had the container of ashes, he was pouring it out, some of it landed on his hand and then bounced from his hand into the water, and we're saying that's puzzle. Now, why should it be puzzle? According to what we just said, that's koichu. Boom, boom, or like that. It's Koichu. Yeah. That was Koichu. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that was Koichu because I hit over here. Okay, whatever. Now, I was not intending to give that demonstration. Okay. But anyway, the point is, if it's doom, then that's Koichu. Why should it be puzzle?
So bouncing is
Koichu. So the bouncing should not be considered Koichu, otherwise by Mechatas it would be kosher. So what do we say? That's the question. You're telling me bouncing a ball off a wall is koichu, but here we see from paradrum that it's not, apparently. The answer is hochab, myaskin b'shoisis. Yes, but we're not talking about over here where it bounced directly off. We're talking about you put paradrum ashes. Some of it landed on your hand. Afterwards, it kind of dribbled off into the water. Not that it went immediately like that. Later on, some of it dribbled off. That for sure is not koichu. Tashma, come, we'll bring another proof, also from the din of Parah Adroma. Now, here we have a din when it comes to sprinkle. Here we're talking about when you sprinkle Parah Adroma water. Again, it has to be the Parah Adroma water comes on the person or the object that you're sprinkling, has to come from the koyach of the person.
Right.
So, therefore,
not, well,
that's what we're going to discuss. Macha choice in a sunnah ala cheres, if you have a needle sitting on top of a piece of earthenware, now the earthenware you're not going to be sprinkling with pot adrum water, it can't become tahor anyway. Once earthenware becomes tame, it's tame forever.
But you had a needle on top of it. The pasture is you put the needle there because otherwise it'll get lost. So you put it on top of something. The hezel, and you sprinkled part of drum water on the needle to make it tar. Suffolk ala machatiza, suffolk ala heretiza omita there. And now you have a suffolk whether you sprinkled directly onto the needle or whether you sprinkled onto the earthenware and then omita there, and then it bounced from the earthenware onto the needle. Has also possible, and has always possible. Again, before that means that bouncing is not considered yiskaya. No, but don't say in the word misa, which means that it bounced. Rather, the word misa would be that it bounced from one to the other. Matza means that you found it. In other words, later on, you looked, you found some water on the needle. So obviously, some part of the water landed on it, but you don't know, did it land on there directly, or again, did it land on the, or even indirectly, that it bounced on there. Or maybe it landed on the earthenware and later on it dribbled down onto the needle. Well, again, for sure that would be possible. So you don't have a proof one way or the other from that Mishnah.
If it bounces directly,
that might be okay. You can't prove one way or the other from the Mishnah. The Mishnah is talking about a case where afterwards you found it and you don't even know whether it bounced or it dribbled. But if it could be that if it bounced, it would have to be kosher. There's different other girsahs and explanations among the Rishonim about maybe the other way around, maybe the original girsah was matzah, that you found the water on it, and later on we're saying mitzah, that it dribbled on, whatever, the point still remains the same. Omer Papa, Haiman de Kafsi Lachabri, here's another case. A person ties up somebody else, the Ashkelon Bidka de Maya, and he turned a flow of water, a current of water onto him. So you have, for example, let's say there was a dam or something holding the water back, and the guy pulls away the dam, or opens up the gates or whatever, and the water starts flowing and then drowns the guy. Girig dehu, then that's considered his direct arrows. That's the equivalent of shooting an arrow. Or mechayev, and therefore he's chayev misa for it. However, hanimili b'koyach rishon. However, that only applies if the guy dies from koyach rishon.
Immediately?
Well, one second. Avo b'koyach sheni, but if it was the second koyach groma ba'almu, then it's only a groma and he would be potter. What is koyach rishon and koyach sheni? Rashi says, as soon as he opened up the current, as soon as he turned on the faucet or removed the dam or whatever, and the water started flowing, it immediately went on him. Koyach sheni, Rashi explains, is that he put him a little bit further away from the flow of the water, so it takes time for the water to reach him, to accumulate and to reach him. That would be considered Kayak Sheni. There's a few other, again, there's a few. From Kayak Sheni, be part there, because that's not considered yet. Again, there's a few other explanations among the Rishonim about the difference in Kayak Rishon and Kayak Sheni. One is it depends if the current is direct, if the current is flowing in this direction, versus you can have the current is flowing in some other direction, but then because of the turbulence of the water, it ends up going towards this direction or something. Yeah, there's a few. Then it would be part that it's Kayak Sheni. That would be part there, yeah. This whole issue, by the way, where also we're saying that if you pull away the dam or open up the water or open up the door or whatever and the water starts flowing, that's considered koichai. This became within the last 100-150 years or so, this became a source that various achronim talk about the question: can turning on an electrical switch be considered koichai as far as various dinim? They talked about it in connection with machine masses, in connection with machine sitzes, in connection with all kinds of things, whether it can be considered kosher or not. Based on this Gemara over here, you have an argument to argue that yes. On the other hand, they argued that on various other grounds that maybe there's a distinction between this case involving Ritzicha and other cases where we know that something has to be done directly by a person's koyach. So the Sedayim is one example, Shchita is another, there's various other dinim where there's a difference in koyach and koyach, where maybe you could argue that turning on the switch is not considered as much koyach relative to those as it would be considered relative to Ritzicha.
Turn on a switch to do what exactly?
For example, to turn on a machine that makes masa, or to turn on a switch that starts weaving wool for sitzes or whatever. That's the question. Based on our Gemara over here, it seems that yes. But on the other hand, there's arguments that are there that can be said that maybe in this case yes, but maybe not necessarily in those other cases. Or furthermore, also it might be that also the causality of a switch may not be as direct as the causality of, we're saying over here, opening up the door and the water right away starting to flow.
It's pretty much...
Well, but even over here, we're saying, again, according to Rashi, if you have the water is continuing to flow and later on it reaches the guy, that's enough to pass it. So then by the same logic, in other words, if the electricity has current, that's the flow, if the electrical current has to flow some distance from the switch to where it actually does the work, then maybe it's not already kosher anymore. Okay, whatever. I'm just mentioning. I'm just mentioning that this is something. These couple of lines of Gemara over here have given rise to a good deal of discussion among the Achrayim. Okay. Well, I'm gonna pop up. Zorach tsro lamaila. The person throws a stone upward. V'hochal tzadin. But it didn't fall directly down. It fell in an arc. It fell sideways, some distance away. V'hogan, it killed somebody. Chayev. Then he's chayev because he's the one who threw it. Because again, it's considered kosher. Actually, Rashi. That's what we're going to discuss.
The arrow is going up and then it goes.
Rashi makes the point like this. If it fell directly down and it killed somebody, okay. Rashi says, in other words, if a person threw up a rock and then he moved away and put somebody else there and the rock fell directly down, then Abadabi, you would say he's potter, because then it's not kochay that the rock falls directly down, then it's gravity that pulls it down.
Right.
So therefore he'd be potter. On the other hand, we're saying if it went to the side, if it went like this, then he'd be chayim.
He throws
the rock upward, but instead of landing directly down, right. It also goes a little bit to the side. That's what the Gemara is going to talk about now. It means that the motion of the rock, the fact that it comes downward, is a combination of gravity and his throwing it. It's a combination of the movement with which he threw it and gravity. So that's what we're going to say.
Even in the first case, it's
in the first case, purely gravity that makes it fall.
No, it goes up, and then it goes back down.
I understand, but the point is that the going up was not part of the killing, because the going up is not killing anything. It's only the coming down that kills, and the coming down at that point is not kosher anymore. It's purely gravity.
Let's say if the guy throws the stone up, right,
mm-hmm.
and he throws, let's say, 5 feet up, and it falls on him and doesn't kill him, instead he throws it 10 feet up, and it falls on him and kills.
Obviously, the harder it falls, the more likely it is to kill. There's no question about that.
It depends on how high it goes up.
That's true. But the point at that point, the fact that it's falling down is not considered koche anymore. That's considered koyach koche. That's considered an indirect result of his original koyach.
Okay.
As opposed to if it goes sideways, the sideways motion, that's what the let's learn the Gemara, and then we'll see. Okay. Amalei ma'abur of Ashidor Papa, my timer, what are you telling me he should be chayev if it went kind of sideways? Mishum koyachu. Are you saying because it's all from his koyach?
Exactly what you mean.
In other words, instead of it going up and straight down, it went like this.
Horizontally.
It went like this. It went in a parabola.
Okay.
And it landed over here.
Right.
Sort of Rav Papa is saying he's chayev.
Right.
So the Ma'abur of Ashi asks why. My timer. Mishum de koyachu. You're telling me because that would be considered koyachu. E koyachu tezaleil. If it was only his koyach, it would only be going upward. It wouldn't be going sideways. So therefore, the fact that it's going sideways on the face of it is not a result of his throwing. How can you even chayev him for the fact that
saying it goes first upward and then sideways, like horizontally? I'm not sure I understand exactly.
Well, if you look in the last Rashi on the Amud, Dehor Klapim Milo Zorka Kenegdev Lele Sudden, he threw it directly upward, not sideways.
Right.
So therefore, how can you be Machai of him for the fact that it went sideways? Well, Chorda, that's not Kosha anymore.
Okay.
So the Gemara says right back, so the Lav Kosha Rutezel Latachas. Okay, but if it wasn't for his Koyach, it would immediately fall down. It wouldn't go to the sides either. So no, what we have to say is it's not his full koyach, but it's part of it. He threw it upward, so therefore he was able to throw it a certain distance. At that point, his koyach ends, and therefore gravity starts taking over and the stone starts falling down.
Meaning, in other words,
when it's falling directly downward, the whole fall is not from kosher. The whole fall is purely gravity. What we're saying is, when it goes like this, when it goes in a parabola, the fact that it's going upward is originally from the kosher. Fine, but that's not the killing. When it's coming downward, you have a combination of two factors. You have gravity, which is causing it to fall downward, but you have his original kosher that he put into it, which is causing it to fall at an angle. Because otherwise it would fall straight down. So therefore, that's enough to be mechayim. It's only koyach tochosh. It's not a full-fledged koyach like it would be if he threw it horizontally, but nevertheless, it's still enough of his koyach to be mechayim. Only if it fell directly down, vertically down, then he would be potter, because then there's none of his koyach involved anymore. It's purely gravity.
Three scenarios. Either he throws horizontally, or he throws vertically, or he throws at an angle.
Or he throws at an angle and it goes in a parabola.
Yes. If he throws vertically, obviously, it's...
Then we're saying he's potter. If he throws horizontally, obviously, he's chayev. And if he throws at an angle and it goes in a parabola, he's also chayev. Because then there's the coming down, when it comes down like this, is a combination of gravity, for which you can't be mechayevim, because koyach
tochosh. Coming down is gravity.
Understood, but the fact that it's not coming straight down, the fact that it's coming down like this, there's also still some of the force that he imparted to it going
point.
In, and that's enough to be mechayevim. That's the point, that's enough to be mechayevim.
We said before that if it goes up, it's only...
If it comes back down straight where it was, then there's none of his koyach anymore.
Right. So he's puzzled because there's two things. There's he's go up to go up,
and there's gravity to go down.
Well, the same thing exists when you say horizontal.
No, because that's the point. Because then what we're saying is the going up is all from his koyach, the coming down is partially his koyach and partly gravity. If it was all gravity, it would come straight down. If it was all his koyach, it would continue going up. The fact that it curves and comes down like this means there's a combination of his koyach that he imparted to it originally, plus gravity, and the combination of those makes it travel in an arc, and that's enough to be mechayev. The fact that his koyach is still involved,
even though
it's also mixed with gravity now. Yes. Okay. Another case. Tanan Rabbanan, hikku asor b'nei adam ba'asor ha'machlis. If 10 people hit a person with 10 sticks, umes, and he ended up dying.
And you saw this example,
didn't we? We mentioned it in Bava Kamma, yes. Yes. Whether they hit him all at once or whether one and then another. Wait. Pturin. All of them are potter, says the Tanakh.
Even the last one?
Rabbi Yehuda ben Beserah. I mean, Bezachazer. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beserah says it depends. If they did it one after the other, Ha'achron Chayev, then the last one is Chayev, and Hishkedav as Misotze, because he's the one who brought closest his death. The other 9 wounded him. He's the one who actually gave the killing blow. So Rabbi Yechanan says both of them actually darshan from the same pasuk. Both of them get their opinions from the same pasuk. Namely, the pasuk says v'ishki yaka kol nefesh adam. The pasuk says if a person hit the all net well kol nefesh of a man. So what is kol nefesh? Rabbanan sabri kol nefesh means adik kol nefesh. The Rabbanan understand the word kol. So the Ran explains what they're arguing about is that fundamentally they're arguing about the meaning of the word kol.
Yeah. Tosfos understands differently. Tosfos says that not over here but elsewhere talks about that the
essential argument is what is the definition of nefesh? Is a part of the nefesh, a little bit of his life, still considered nefesh, or does it have to be his whole life still exists? But according to the Ran, well, that's the question. The kol nefesh could mean all of even a tiny part of his nefesh, a tiny part of his life, or it could mean all of his entire nefesh, meaning therefore that even that once the first 9 guys hit him and took away some of his nefesh, then the 10th guy can't be chayav for killing him. That's how Tosfos learns elsewhere. The Ran over here talks about that. No, the fundamental machlokes is what is the meaning of the word kol? Kol sometimes can mean all,
sometimes it can mean any. For example, the Torah tells us kol on mitzvah, yes, it can mean any mitzvah, it means all the mitzvahs. On the other hand, for example, the Pasuk says, the Pasuk says, well, it says kol nevela, that means you're not
eat every nevela in the world, it means you're not eat any nevela. So therefore, the word kol can mean all or it can mean any. So that's the question. So that Abbanon hold, it means add the ikka kol nefesh, that kol over here means all, you have to add the entire nefesh. And if you don't have the entire nefesh, because the 9 guys beat him already, then he's potter. Rabbi Yehuda Sava, kol nefesh, kol dehu nefesh. Or Rabbi Yehuda ben Beserah holds that kol can mean any. So as long as there's any amount of nefesh left, then that's enough. Yeah. Omar Rava.
What's that, by the way?
What is? Omar Rava, a kol modem behove as a shefer to a potter. Everybody would agree that if a person killed a shefer, now a shefer by people has basically the same definition as by animals. Rashi gives an example. Let's say his food pipe, for example, his esophagus has a hole in it, which is considered something that would be lethal.
In the case of an animal or a person, because then food gets into the body cavity and whatever. Or for example, there's a hole in the membranes around the brain or whatever. You have all the various, when we learn colon, we'll talk all about the trephus. You have 8 basic categories of trephus from which the Mishnah derives 18 total, and the Rambam expands them to 70 by counting subcategories.
But now this is
Ah, so the Rambam says on this, I'll tell you, in the case of animals, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Shchita that it doesn't matter. Whatever Chazal tell us is considered Tereza, even if modern medicine says it's curable, the animal is still Tereza. Vice versa, anything that modern medicine says it would kill the animal, but it's not in the list of Terezas, doesn't make the animal Tereza. When it, for, oh. Such as, for example, or if the animal has cancer, for example, I don't know.
So that's not making trip.
So, okay. So in the case of a person, actually, it's interesting, a couple of the Achronim, Chaim Ozer, Rav Moshe Feinstein, talk about that in terms of the Gemara over here, we were talking about Hoi versus Trefa, it would have to be that there's both. It would have to be Trefa according to the definitions of Chazal and incurable according to modern medicine. If it's only one or the other, then he wouldn't be considered a Trefa for this purpose. Okay. Anyway. So, a Kolmoid in Behogas a Trefa Shul Potter. So Rava says, everybody agrees if a person kills a Trefa, he's Potter. Because, in other words, once there's something in his body that makes him already that he's on the verge that he's soon going to die, then he's already considered as if he's dead. So you can't be mechayev a person for killing him. The goyis is b'dei shemayim shulchayev. On the other hand, everybody agrees that if a person is near death of natural causes, so like euthanasia or whatever, there's no question would be chayev. Lo nechlaku the machlokas between the chachamim and Rabbi Huda ben Beseira is only the goyis is b'dei adam. The question is, in our case over here, he's a goitis, he's near death, but he's not because of natural causes, it's because the first nine guys beat him up. That's the question. Is he considered a goitis for that purpose? If he's a goitis b'dei shemayim of natural causes, then there's no question that a person kills him, he's chayim.
He is chayim.
Chayim. That's a euthanasia, is also in the Torah, and yeah, it would make the person chayim miss, actually. The question is over here. The guy has been beaten by nine people. He's near death. Is he more like a trefer or is he more like a goitis? Bidei shemayim. Mar medami le trefer. So the chachamim compare him to a trefer. So just as you're potter for killing a trefer, so you'd be potter. The tenth person who hit him is potter because effectively he's killed the trefer. Umar medami le goitis bidei shemayim. Whereas Rabbi Huda ben Rosera compares it to a goitis bidei shemayim. Just as a goitis bidei shemayim, a person who is near death of natural causes, you're chayev for killing him. So also, that's what we have to figure out. That my time alone, medami le goitis bidei shemayim. Why did the Chachamim compare him to a trefa and not to a goitis bidei shemayim? What's the logic? Goitis literally means like a person. Goitis means like you've heard the expression in English, death rattle. But right before a person dies, like they're bringing up phlegm from their throat, like they're breathing heavily, wheezing or whatever. That the literal definition of goitis is like stirring a pot. It's like he's stirring up the phlegm and whatever in his throat. Labored breathing. Yeah, hamagus, you're thinking of, right. So hamagus means stirring a pot. So, right, goitis is related to that. It's like the phlegm and whatever stirring in his throat, right. Yeah, that's the definition of goitis, yeah. So the question is, the chachamim will compare him to a trefa, and therefore say that you would be potter, that the tenth person is potter for beating him. Why don't they compare him to a trefa b'dei shemayim? The answer is goitis b'dei shemayim, lo yisaved b'maisa. Because of goitis b'dei shemayim, nothing has been done to him. He's dying of natural causes. Here, maisa has been done to him. Nine people have beaten him already. So it's more logical to compare him to a trefa, where also something may have been done to him. A trefa also is not necessarily an animal or a person can become trefa. Yeah, for example, that can involve human action. So therefore, by the same logic, this is more similar. It was also caused by human action. What about Rabbi Huda ben Beseira who compares it to a ghost of b'dei shemayim and says therefore that the last person is chayev? My time le medami le trefa. Why did he not compare it to a trefa? The answer is trefa b'chatchi simonim, because in the case of a trefa, the simonim, not literally the simonim in the neck, but more generally the simonim of life, have actually been cut off. Oh, le mechatchi simonim. Here, this guy has been beaten. But there's no actual simonim of life that have necessarily been cut off. There's no particular thing that you could point to that you're going to say at the end, this is the cause of death. At this point, because the difference is, for example, a person has a hole in his lung or whatever, eventually, after he dies, you're going to be able to say that was the cause of his death. Mashenkin over here, nine people beat him, he didn't die yet. So therefore, you can't say any of the blows, any of the wounds that they gave him is not yet the cause of his death. Therefore, he
said that he received the lethal.
But he didn't get it. He received the lethal blow. He died after the ninth one.
basis or whatever. Fine. So, okay, we could be, again, we could be talking about, for example, that nine people beat him, and then, you know, and then a week later, for example, one of them, whatever. The point is, and then the tenth person hits him, whatever. The point is that the point still remains that we don't have a basis for saying that any of the first nine gave him a killing blow, because they didn't kill him yet.
Right.
Only the tenth one killed him. Okay, so that's actually the distinction. Hold on. So I misspoke it before. The next Mishnah is going to talk about a case where a person hits somebody and the guy is lingering and we put him in jail meanwhile. The difference is, that's the difference. The difference is over there, there's no other external factor that you can point to that would cause his recovery or his death. Here you have a tenth person beats him. So therefore you have a possible reason to say that the first nine people didn't beat him hard enough to kill him, on the other hand, the 10th person beat him, and now he's dead. You have a much stronger reason to say that it's only the 10th person who killed him, as opposed to...
a stronger reason, but not necessarily. The ninth blow, or a previous blow, could have been the lethal one, but it expressed itself at the time of the 10th one.
Understood, but the fact of the matter remains that you have two different factors. In the next Mishnah and the Gemara on it, you only have one factor. One guy hit him, and now he's sick and eventually dies from it, or he recovers, as the case may be. Over here, you have different people involved, so therefore you don't have enough of a basis for saying that any of the previous one. The fact is, the first nine are for sure going to be positive, both according to the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. The question is only about the 10th one. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira takes the view, therefore, that with a trefa you have an obvious cause of death. You can point to the hole in his lung or what have you and say this is definitely what killed him. In this case, you don't necessarily have a basis for that. So therefore, it's more logical to compare him to a goyis v'idei shamayim.
I'll give you an example. He received nine blows on the right side and one blow on the left side.
Right.
But he's proved to have died from one of the blows on the right side, not on the left side. Now you have a tangible proof that the tenth blow was not the killing blow. It was one of the nine ones. Because we can say for sure that he died from one of the nine blows on the right side, not on the left side.
Okay, so in that case then, the tenth one is out of the picture. But nevertheless, the fact remains he only died after the tenth blow. So therefore, in that case, what you have is it had to be the combination of the ninth and tenth. Fine, but the point is, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira
was on one side and all the other nine.
But the point is, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira is saying at the time the tenth one hit him, there wasn't anything you could point to up until now to say this is definitely going to kill him, as opposed to with a trefa, you know. Right now, that he already, you know, right now from X-rays that he already has a hole in his lung. You know already from examination.
That you have, let's say, a ninth blow or a blow before the ninth.
But you only find out after he's dead, as opposed to with a trefa, you know at the time that this is going to kill him within a certain amount of time.
Okay, so what's the difference?
That's the difference. One you know and the other you don't. Here, mechapchi simonim. Here, the simonim of death are actually cut. The simonim of life are actually cut. You can point to something that this is definitely going to kill him. In that case, loy mechapchi simonim. In the case of the 10 people, there's no simonim that are necessarily cut. And therefore, you can say the 10th one is killing a goitis. And somebody kills a goitis, somebody who commits euthanasia, is chayim. The halacha is like the chachamim as it usually is, which would mean that in that case that the all 10 of them are potter, because it would be the equivalent of killing a trefa. The definition of a goyis v'idei shamayim is that there was no human involvement. The definition of a trefa or of a goyis v'idei adam is that there can be human involvement, and therefore, just as killing a trefa is potter, so also killing a goyis v'idei adam would also be potter. Okay. Tani tana kamedid of sheshes. A tana taught the following in front of Rav Sheshes, the following brisa. Pasuk says v'ish ki yaka kol nefesh adam. It says if a person strikes or hits any or all nefesh of a person, this comes to include somebody who hits another person, the ein bei kedei lahom, it's where the blow is not strong enough by itself to kill, or barach of him, and then somebody else comes and kills the guy, shul chayev, that the second person is chayev, or stomach, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. So there you have a stam b'raisa like Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira.
who says that the tenth person, that the last one, tenth or whatever it is, would be chayev. Same logic over here. The second one would be chayev. Omar Rava, since we're talking about treifas, other dinim involving treifas, ha-hodeg is a treifa potter. If somebody kills a treifa, he's potter. We established that before. Everybody agrees to that. Here's another din, though, that comes in connection with a treifa. With treifa shahorag, what about if it's the other way around? What if a treifa is the perpetrator? What if he's the killer? Treifa shahorag, a person who's treifa, a person who has a hole in his lung or whatever, he goes and kills somebody. Is he chayev nisa or not?
Yeah,
it depends. Bifnei based in chayev shaloi bifnei based in potter. If he did it in front of based in, he'll be chayev. If he did it not in front of based in, then if he did it not in front of based in and you're going to have edus, then you can't be mechayev. Why? The habila edus shi apiyoka lahazima. Because then this is an edus where hazama cannot take place in it. Because let's consider what would happen if these edim will come against him, turn out to be edim zayim. It's supposed to be baptism like kasher zaman. We're supposed to do to the edim what they would have wanted to do to him. Well, they who wanted to kill a treifa would be potter. We just established before that killing a treifa is potter. Therefore, we can't be mechayev them as edim zayimim. It means you can't bring them as edim in the first place. So if he does it in front of beis din to no edus is needed, then fine. Now, the question is, though, the question that Mephoshim asks is, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that Fakert, if beis din sees a person killing, they can't judge him. Because an aid not the dayan, because an aid cannot become a dayan, and they themselves need to be able to find exonerating evidence for him, and having seen it, seeing is a powerful thing, they're not going to be able to find any yet. So how does the, what does the Gemara mean over here? So they talk about a couple of possibilities. One is the Gemara mentions over here that the Gemara mentions over here, the Gemara itself gives a reason, my time chayev, why would we say if it's before based on his chayev, dichtu, the outer harama kubecha, because the pasuk says you should remove evil from your midst, meaning in other words, based on has a responsibility to get rid of evil. So that's one explanation, is basically that's that. In other words, it's true. Under normal circumstances, we would say ain aid not to die, and here you have no choice. Given that you can't bring aid him against him, then you have no choice. Based enough to execute him to get rid of such an evildoer.
Because there's no other way
to do it. Mela, if the guy killed in front of a beis din, then you say, don't have that beis din judge him, have that beis din be aid him and come in front of another beis din, because you're still able to accomplish it that way. Here, where there's no way to do it, because we're saying aid him won't work because of the problem of aidus shiati yochal azima, then b'las b'rer, we execute him just in order to get rid of this evil doer. That's one explanation. The other interesting explanation is because he's a trefa, because he's a dead man walking anyway, we don't care so much for the normal rules of evidence. We don't mind bending the rules a little bit, because anyway, he's a treifa. Anyway, he's going to die soon. That's the other explanation. Okay. Shaloi b'fnei beis din potter. If it's not in front of beis din, then he's potter. Dehavila edus shiati yochal azima. Because again, then you have it's edus that you can't be mazim, because you wouldn't be able to punish the edim as edim zomin, if it turned out they were. V'chol edus shiati yochal azima. Loi shma edus. Such a thing cannot be considered edus.
Edus has to be able to be
muzim. That's why we said before in the Masechta, that's why you have to have the seven hakiras to establish the exact time and place. Okay, but Amar Rava, then Rava says another din in connection with the treifa. Horeveya et a treifa chayev. If somebody does mishkav zocher with a treifa, so the treifa, in other words, was the recipient, chayev, then the one who did it, the doer, is chayev. On the other hand, treifa shirava. On the other hand, if a treifa does this to somebody else, same thing. Bifnei beis din chayev shaloi bifnei beis din potter. Same thing. If he does it in the presence of beis din, then he's chayev. If not, then he's potter. Bifnei beis din chayev again. Dichtiv will be out to haram kibecha, because the pasuk says you should get rid of evil from your midst. Beis din saw that he did such an evil thing, so therefore they're responsible to get rid of him. Shaloi bifnei beis din potter. But again, if it was not in front of beis din, he's potter. Same thing. The havila edus shiat yochal azima. Same thing. The question is how to lomali. What do we need the second case? It derives exactly from the first case. The answer is Hainuhach, isn't it the same thing? Tosfos, by the way, points out another thing is the Fnei Beis Din would also have to be it happened during the day in order for them to be able to convict him. If it happened by night, even though they were able to see him, you can't judge Dinei Nefashos or Dinei Mamonos for that matter by night. Therefore, of necessity, they're going to have to act as Edim the next day. They're not sitting down right away and judging him. And Edus, we said, you can't have. So the question is, isn't it the same thing? Why is Rava repeating himself? The answer is Haraveyat of Trefa. The Chiddush is the case where somebody does this to a Trefa. Maud Tema, because you would think, if not for Rava saying this, Lahevi commanded Meshamash Mes,
since the Trefa is already almost dead, he's going to die soon, you should consider as if he's already dead, and therefore somebody who does revere with him should be considered like somebody who's doing it with a dead body, where he's potter. Kamash Malan, that's the Chiddush. D'mishum Hanahu, that no, the issue is not, is the guy alive or dead? The question is the matter of Hanah, is he having Hanah? V'ha, is the Hanah. In this case, he's having Hanah. When it comes to a mess, Rashi says there's no Hanah because the mess is cold and dried out and whatever, and whatever. But over here, the guy is still physically alive. He still has body heat, he's still whatever. So therefore, the one who does it has Hanah, and therefore that's enough to be mechayving, even though it's true that Trefa is going to die soon.
All right. We'll continue tomorrow. That's the same.